The 2006 Sunstone Symposium Arizona presents Session 6, Mormonism in the Academy, a panel discussion with Eduardo Pagan, Doe Daughtry, Brian Birch, Ann Wertman, and Mark Woodward, moderated by Laura Bush.
Hi there. Is this working?
Yes.
My name is Laura Bush, and this is the session on Mormonism in the Academy, one that I'm really excited about. I am a lecturer in the Humanities and Arts program out at ASU Polytechnic, which used to be known as the ASU East program. And I've also done a little bit of guest lecturing in Doe Daughtry's Current Issues in Mormonism class and thought a lot about Mormon studies and kind of, I think that this session is important because here we are meeting at Arizona State University for the first time as Sunstone at an academy itself, and I am very appreciative of, as Doe and others who do Mormon studies, we're very appreciative of the Department of Religious Studies at Arizona State University, in a sense, legitimizing what we're doing and promoting it, and it's gaining momentum across the country, and this particular session is about that kind of phenomenon and momentum and how we can essentially make the best of it and promote it and legitimize it. So I want to just very briefly introduce the panelists. What we have in mind is them taking about 10 minutes apiece, 7 to 10, and then we want to have a conversation among ourselves and with you about the issue of studying Mormonism within the academy, any kinds of tensions, problems, benefits of that, both to Mormons and non-Mormons, right, insiders and outsiders. So even though they're not lined up here, Eduardo Pagan will go first. He is the chair of Languages, Cultures, and History Department and an associate professor of American Studies at Arizona State University at the West Campus. He's a cultural and intellectual historian with a particular interest in the U.S.-Mexican borderland. And before Eduardo came to ASU West Campus, he was a faculty member of the Department of History at Williams College, where he actually taught a course in Mormon history at Williams College back east. And he also was recently a senior program officer in the Division of Research Program at the National Endowment for the Humanities, working with historically black, Hispanic, serving in tribal colleges and universities. Then next to him on the end is Doe Daughtry, and she, I think, essentially is Mormon studies at Arizona State University. She's taught and designed and taught a course called Current Issues in Mormonism, which she'll be teaching again this semester. And she's a PhD student in the Department of Religious Studies and a member of the Sunstone Board of Directors. Next to Eduardo here is Brian Birch. We're very glad that Brian has come from Utah. He's the director of the Religious Studies Program at Utah Valley State College, and he teaches courses in philosophy of religion and theology. He's also the editor of Element, a journal of the Society for Mormon Philosophy and Theology, and his PhD is in religion, which he got from Claremont Graduate University, and Claremont is an important connection and has been an important promoter also of Mormon studies, which you will find out by listening to Ann Wertman here next to Brian, and she is in her first year of the PhD program here at Arizona State University in Religion in North Americas, and she previously obtained her bachelor's degree at the University of Virginia and her master's degree at Claremont School of Theology, both in religious studies. Her MA thesis is entitled Hoping for Another Revelation, Gays and Lesbians in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we're very interested in Anne's perspective as a non-member studying Mormonism. Mark Woodward, also a non-member, non-member representative,
we're not.
I guess I didn't identify you as such. Huh? It was something I took for granted. But Mark Woodward is a professor of religious studies at ASU, specializing in Islam, religion and culture, religion and modernity, hermeneutics, Islamic mysticism in Java, and he's edited an introductory textbook for use in world religions courses, which includes a section on Mormonism. And so he'll have some interesting perspectives, I think, on undertaking that task. So with those introductions, we'll begin with Eduardo.
Thanks. I've been told that we're limited to 10 minutes, and so I will do my best to keep my comments very brief. I apologize to this side of the room. I have some handouts that I'll just mention very briefly. I don't intend to use them, but after the presentation, I'll be happy to give you some if you'd like. Basically, what I want to do is just very quickly talk a little bit about my experiences of teaching Mormon history within an academic setting, but also within a church setting. Both have their complications, both have their challenges, as you can imagine. As Laura had mentioned, I taught a course in early church history at Williams College. Nobody in the class, to my knowledge, was a member of the church. It was a very interesting experience to have them read the Doctrine and Covenants, the Book of Mormon, to talk about them critically. I just wanted to make some observations, and I'm not sure if this will be in line with the panel. I hope it is. But some of the challenges one faces in teaching Mormon history in both very different settings. In a church setting, as you can imagine, the purpose, particularly in adult instruction, whether it's institute or Sunday school, really the purpose of instruction there is devotional, quite honestly. And so a very critical study of church history is almost as out of place as serving coffee at sacrament meeting, if you know what I mean. But nonetheless, naively, I tried that. And so one of the handouts that I have is actually a syllabus that I put together when I taught doing my graduate work at Princeton. The Sunday school president at the time, who was a Palestinian convert, very interesting, himself, asked me if I would teach this course on church history, and I said I would only do so if I could do it on my terms, and he agreed to do so. And so I wanted to turn that course really into a more college-oriented course, looking at all sorts of materials, looking at all sorts of perspectives in a way that I thought was intellectually honest. For the most part, it worked. There were some people that had a difficult time with it. You might be interested to know that there was a State High councilman that wanted to try me for heresy that failed. But nonetheless, it just kind of illustrates some of the challenges, as you can imagine. Most people go to church not necessarily to learn, but to be reinforced in their beliefs. And as I said, naively so, I thought this was a venue of learning. And so I put together that syllabus. And so that's one of the handouts that I've got for you there. And just with that syllabus, there was also, I just included an example of a lesson handout that I would do every week where I would provide primary sources and we would talk about history and how and the art of history and interpretation and things of so forth. The other document that I handed out was actually the syllabus from this course that I taught at Williams College, which was also very interesting. And let me just say, one of the challenges that I find in teaching Mormon history to in an academic setting, particularly to a non-Mormon audience, is this is very curious to me. I have taught courses in Native American religiosity, Native American spirituality, and I find students, by and large, are willing to suspend belief and suspend prejudice when it's dealing with Native American religiosity. But when you deal with the religiosity, the ecstatic experiences of Mormons, or also generally whites or white Christians, the blinders go up and the biases go up immediately. And I find that very, very interesting. And I've long suspected there's a kind of reverse racism that's an effect that yes, of course, Indians would have their spirituality, and yes, we should respect that. But when it comes to whites, no, they should be more rational, and they shouldn't. You know, we shouldn't give them equal weight in taking them at their word to a certain extent that they believed what they said they were doing. So I found, you know, it's very interesting. It's a complicated subject to teach in both venues because the material is so polarized, because of the dominant narrative that exists both among Mormons but also the narrative that exists among Christian denominations. And it's a real challenge to do, but I guess stubbornly so, this is why I find it very interesting to do. I love dealing with these controversies. So I think my 10 minutes are up, but all right. Is that, or I can babble on? Okay. Oh, do I have a few more minutes? Okay, thanks. That might be a first. Thanks. I won't take that personally, but all right. You know, one of the things that in both settings that I find it very important to do, whether it's within a religious setting or whether it's in an academic setting, is it's very important to start the course talking about epistemology and how do we know what we don't, basically. And really drawing upon paradigms to help students get beyond their biases, the narratives that they have grown up, whether they're believing Mormons or whether they are believing Christians of other denominations and believe that Mormons are akin to Satan worshipers or something like that. It really is, it's important to spend about a week dealing with epistemological issues and trying to give them tools and methods to understand the world through the eyes of the subjects that we study. That's a challenge to do, as I said, both in both kinds of venues. Within a faithful venue, within a church venue, people are there because they believe the dominant narrative for the most part. And the dominant narrative, as I think most of us know, has problems. And there are a number of issues that are not dealt with in the dominant narrative. There are a number of sources that are not dealt with that I think need to be dealt with if we're going to be open and honest about the study of the past. And I guess this is my angle, I guess, to out myself, as I consider myself a historian first and foremost. Is there truth in history? We can debate that question, but I do think we need to be open and honest in whatever kind of history that we look at. And we have to look at the controversies, and we have to find ways of discussing these things. Okay, I think I probably exhausted my time there. Is Doe next? Okay.
I'm not going to stand up. Okay. ASU is 5 minutes or less from Mesa, Arizona, and 10 minutes from Gilbert, which is the newest Mormon enclave in the Phoenix area. Thus, the university is located in a secondary LDS cultural setting and, like Mesa Community College, has a significant LDS student population. The LDS Church operates an institute program out of a large building on ASU campus, which will soon expand to accommodate student growth. And as a side but very significant note, it has a dedicated parking lot. And those of you who come here a lot know how important that is. Religious Studies is located in a building on that same street and caters to a large student population because so many of its classes fulfill general studies requirements. PhD tracks include Religion in America and Asian Religions, Global Islam, and Religion in Conflict. For a variety of reasons, the large LDS population, Arizona history, and the growing recognition of Mormonism as an important topic in the academy, my department felt that it was important to develop a regular course that would begin to address and explore the rich Mormon religious and cultural tradition. As it happened then, it was like the proverbial out of the frying pan and into the fire. My first teaching experience involved creating and teaching an undergraduate course in Mormonism. I chose to structure the course as a current issues course because my primary interest is contemporary religion in the American context of new religious movements or alternative religions. Despite having changed the course in various ways each time I've taught it, my goals have pretty much stayed the same. I want students who take this course to reach these general goals: to gain an expanded awareness of and tolerance for different worldviews, develop critical thinking and writing skills, especially in the area of religious studies, expand their views as either insiders or outsiders, not only of institutional Mormonism, but also of Mormonism as lived experience. The other major decision I made and that I've stuck with was to structure the course thematically. I intended to highlight critical themes or categories to the discipline of religious studies that also reveal something about Mormonism. A thematic approach not only introduces students to historical Mormonism and allows us to explore religious change over time and to see how the concepts inform the practice of Mormonism today. I've identified these themes by paying attention at church, first of all, to recurring topics, perusing official LDS Church websites, particularly its responses to media and announcements to members, and by electronically collecting news articles and press releases about Mormonism or Mormons, asking those sources the question, what do you care about the most? What now, on this day, at this time and place, do you care about the most? The themes I originally started with were identity, bodies, history, power and authority, social issues and conflict, and modernity and globalization. Each of these categories built on each other such that identity is was the overarching theme that gets articulated through LDS history, LDS theology of embodiment, personal and divine identity, etc. This year, I think, I have more closely articulated these categories, asking that question about what Mormons care about the most as conversion, history, and eternal identity that go hand in hand, although it may not seem like it, power and authority, ethics and kinship, and finally growth, which takes in the discussion of globalization but also includes concern over the internal dissent that comes with growth and the external anxiety that is caused in others by it. I've talked about this, all of this in detail at Sunstone before, so what I really wanted to do today is mainly to quickly share with you some insights I've had about some of the recurring problems I face in teaching this course. And, of course, many of those are problems that all instructors face. And some of the new ways that I've thought of to try to solve them for this semester. First, I always struggle over what assessments to use. In religious studies, this can be even more difficult than in other disciplines because some assignments, like the topic, carry lots of baggage. For instance, I've always been afraid of requiring site visits. You know, so although many of my colleagues do that, I've been afraid that in the context of this course in particular, that students and or their parents would accuse me of using the course and visits to only LDS sites as a proselytizing tool. On the other hand, asking students to attend an LDS church meeting as an introduction to the lived experience of Mormonism becomes even more complicated when half or more of the class is LDS. Right? Well, that's not a real stretch. Not only are these students left unchallenged by the visit, most of them also lack the ability to see their church experience critically, to ask the right, you know, even if I give them a list of questions, I doubt many of them would be able to ask, to apply those questions to their experience in church. My experience of many LDS students is that while they may use the tools of critical analysis on literature or science, they find it extremely difficult to do a critical analysis on a topic relating to Mormonism, whether of a site visit or of a text or an idea. In addition, they most often don't recognize that what they turn in is not an analysis, but a personal theological statement. Last time I taught the course, I thought I would have them play professor for a day and have them stick with the readings. And I thought that would solve, you know, in the categories of analysis, and I thought that would solve the problem. However, even with explicit rubrics and repeated in-class and online instruction, I found that about three-quarters of the LDS students in the class ignored the text and presented Sunday school-like lessons to their classmates. One, for instance, giving a wonderful talk about how chiasmus in the Book of Mormon proves it to be an historical document. And I tried to get them to see that the important question wasn't, in our context, was not whether the Book of Mormon was an historical document, but why its truth as an historical document is so important to Mormonisms, why he would feel the need to get up and press this issue, why he chose that as his topic. And so we discussed that, because I just said, you know, we're not going to prove that here. We're not going to come to any conclusion about that today. So then we had a really interesting conversation. As the semester wore on, though, I was really gratified by the last presentation of the semester, which it was on Terry Tempest Williams' Refuge that I'll describe if I have time in a minute. In terms of assessments, from the beginning, I've known that any cumulative assignment for this course requires comparison of some kind. I've always had students visit Deseret Book and any other Christian bookstore and then write an analysis comparing the contents, environment, etc. of the two sites. And it's been very revealing. For various reasons, I've decided I want to do something new this semester, and I'm going to be brave and attempt a site visit at an LDS and another comparable Christian service, so some main Sunday morning service or Sunday afternoon service, with the goal of doing a sort of Foucauldian interrogation of their experience with questions like, who gets to talk there? What do they get to talk about? What gets left out? What roles do women and children play there, if any, etc.? One of my other ubiquitous problems is text choice. So much work has been done that is useful in the classroom in Mormon studies. In addition, the issue of whether or not to use scripture looms large. Regardless, and I'm not a scriptorian, and so I admit to not really caring that much about integral analysis. I'm more interested in concepts, so I kind of skip that, although I do use the church's website and the scriptures there. In addition, regardless, in courses on Mormonism, the historical component is imperative. One of my main arguments in the course is that Mormon experience is not monolithic, and there are many ways to be Mormon. This has not just to do with my firm belief that diversity in Mormonism actually exists, but it also involves recognition of religious change in Mormonism over time. However, it is impossible to convince LDS students of that unless they can read it in history for themselves. And so that's why I assign things like women, Maxine Hank's Women in Authority or Laura Bush's Transgressions. I'm sorry. Faithful Transgressions. Yes. Sorry, Laura. You're my hero. Sunstone makes a great text. I've used it at Sunstone extensively. One especially compelling article was an interview with the former bishop of a gay ward in San Francisco titled Pastoring the Far Side, which touches on several of the important class themes such as individual versus institutional authority, identity, and how it is impacted by religious rhetoric, the dilemmas of kinship and difference. And this article always surprises LDS students, and it provides for a really rich discussion. One of the main problems with text choice is that some LDS students are reluctant to read books they perceive as being critical of the church. The last student that I mentioned before to be professor of the day for a day was one of the most cordially combative. That's the only way I can describe it. He was constantly combative, but he did it with a smile. he was one of the most cordially combative students in the class. And he would use his laptop to look up things on the church website to try to trip me up or prove me wrong. He had refuge, and his story was, his presentation made me cry, actually, and I find it difficult to even talk about it without crying, because he was returned missionary, combative, aggressive, and his presentation consisted of a PowerPoint presentation where he said, I didn't even want to read this book. I went to the Amazon.com website and I looked up reviews on the book, and a BYU professor said that it was man-hating, Utah-hating, and LDS church-hating, and I said, I don't want to read this book. Well, I guess I have to. It's worth, 30% of my grade or something. I guess I have to. So he found some used copy somewhere. He'd waited until, the last minute. And he said, I read the book, and I was compelled while reading the book to make a list of the things that the LDS Church tells us is most important. And so he put up a slide of all of these things: family, kinship, relationships, and he had this whole long list, and I apologize, I don't have it, and then he put up a slide showing, comparing that list to his own life. He did a self-interrogation. And, I'm not very close to my family. I don't. And then he put up a slide that showed a comparison of the three different, the church's values, his experience or his product in life, and then Terry Tempest Williams as revealed through Refuge. And he said, he went through all those things and compared them all, and he said, my conclusion is this: this book is, not only did I not see any of what the BYU professor said about this book, I didn't see any man-hating, any Utah-hating, any Mormon-hating in this book. I see now that Terry Tempest Williams is a better member of the LDS Church, regardless of how traditional or orthodox she is, than I am. And it broke my heart. He said, so finally now at the end I see that there really are. And he said, I resisted this to the very end, but now I am convinced that you're right. And so he'd spent the whole semester trying to prove me wrong on his laptop. You're right. There are many ways to be Mormon. And so I had one student write to me, well, it's clear that Terry Tempest Williams doesn't take her temple covenant seriously. She's wearing, in this picture, she's wearing a sleeveless shirt, meaning she's not wearing her temple garments. And so these were the kinds of comments that got made about the texts and about the characters. And he had a real epiphany. It was a real epiphany for him, and so that was an important moment for me, and I think for him too. I find LDS students perplexing in a way that I find no others. They have been beleaguered, but certainly now hold positions of power. ASU, for instance, is influenced by the generosity of philanthropist and LDS church member Ira Fulton, sometimes in controversial ways, and Mitt Romney might just well be the next president of the United States. And he gasps. Though still a target, anything's possible. My point is that, Mormons have taken over the Capitol building, right? Though still a target of the anti-cult and counter-cult movements, Latter-day Saints can no longer say that they are a persecuted American minority. With longevity, increased numbers, political power, and social and cultural influence, LDS students at ASU feel more comfortable asserting themselves in class. According to stories told by other instructors, they are also even more likely to be defensive and combative in class than self-identified evangelical Christian students. The first semester I taught religion in America, I introduced myself and my interest to almost 200 students in a presentation that I felt had gone very well, only to come home to a message that a student in the class accused me of being anti-Mormon explaining that because of the way I explain my interest in the intersection between Mormonism and New Age and the relevance of Mormon studies to ASU, because of Arizona's Mormon history and the impact of the ongoing controversy over FLDS polygamy in Arizona on Arizona politics. Like most of us who feel passionate about ultimate truth, we don't often know how we look and sound to others when we assert our rights in the public sphere. Because Mormonism is a complete cultural system, a comprehensive worldview, courses in Mormonism have much more to do than just teach outsiders about Mormon beliefs and practices. My hope is that Mormon studies in the ASU Department of Religious Studies will not only result in students' increased knowledge of and appreciation for those elements of Mormonism, but will also help LDS students learn to be more aware of themselves and more skillful in human relationships that by definition involve their assertion of Mormon identity.
I appreciate the opportunity to be part of this panel, and to I'm appreciative to Dan for inviting me down. Talking about Mormon studies at Utah Valley State College in 10 minutes or less is a very difficult thing, but I will do my best. Even though we've been in existence, even though we've been in existence for about 6 years or 7 years now, it's a rather complicated story. What I plan to do is to talk about the present state of Mormon studies at UVSC, and then to tell two stories that illustrate some of the challenges we face in Utah County. As it stands now, Mormon studies functions under the auspices of a broader religious studies program at UVSC. And we recently had a minor in religious studies approved just this past July, after 2 or 3 years of effort on our part. At present, we offer 4 courses in Mormon studies: the anthropology of Mormonism, taught in the behavioral science department; Mormon literature in the English department; Mormon cultural studies that's taught out of the communications department; and this next fall I will be teaching Mormon theology and the Christian tradition. And we have several scholars whose primary focus at present is on Mormon studies. Dennis Potter, who is the program coordinator for Mormon studies and the person who should be here today, myself, David Knowlton, who some of you know, does anthropology and teaches the anthropology of religion and anthropology of Mormonism class; Boyd Peterson in our English department, recently published a biography of his father-in-law, Hugh Nibley; Jen Walquist in English; Darren Smith teaches the Mormon cultural studies as well. In reflecting on what we wanted to do with Mormon studies at UVSC, we decided that we wanted to focus on the strengths. And because both Dennis Potter and myself have a background in philosophy of religion and theology, and since that particular discipline is one that is in its infancy, really, and really needs to develop, we decided that we were going to focus our attention more specifically on issues of theology and philosophy than we would other areas, just in the interest of trying to cultivate this area of study. And so that's what we've been most active in over the past few years. As Laura said, I currently edit the journal of this new society for Mormon philosophy and theology called Element. In addition to the courses, we have extracurricular activities each semester. We sponsor 2 major events. Each spring, we have a Mormon Studies Conference, and this year's conference title is Mormonism and the Christian Tradition. Bob Millett from BYU, who just published a book with Erdman's A Different Jesus, is going to be the keynote speaker. And we've invited theologians from various traditions to come in and discuss different theological issues at work in their traditions and possible ways in which they relate to LDS thought. We also sponsor the Eugene England Lecture Series, named after our dear friend and colleague, Gene England, who passed away in 2001 while working on Mormon studies at UVSC, which I'll get to in a minute. We just formed a Mormon Studies Club. This was a student-led effort. Students came to Dennis Potter, said they wanted to start a club. They did all of the work, and so far they've met twice. So that's in its early stages. We've had different guest lectures and scholars in. For example, a month or two ago, Richard Dutcher came in to talk about his new film. And so various opportunities arise, of course, in Utah County for people to come and speak. And so we try to take advantage of those as much as we can. In order to understand the issues that we face, as I said before, I think two stories really help to show what's going on in our context. As you know, UVSC is, as many of you know at least, UVSC is a state college situated in Orem, Utah, which, as you know, is, depending on who does the counting, 90% LDS. We suspect that our student population is somewhere around 87 to 93% Latter-day Saint. And the political context within which we operate creates some interesting issues as well, because not only do we have a very conservative legislative representation in Utah County, but we have very doctrinaire legislators who are interested in social issues and interested in protecting what they call the values of Utah County. And so that has created challenges for us all the way along. Mormon studies at UVSC began with Eugene England, as some of you know. He arrived in 1998. I first met Gene when Scott Abbott and I organized a symposium on academic freedom there on campus, and we invited Gene, who had just been there a little while, to speak on Mormon studies in higher education. And this is where he first delivered the speech that he delivered at Sunstone on academic freedom and opportunities in Utah higher education. And in that speech, he gave an impassioned plea to for higher education in the state of Utah to support and cultivate Mormon studies, and argued that at that time, Utah Valley State College was arguably the best place to be doing Mormon studies because of the particular situation at both BYU and the University of Utah, both of which at that time were ignoring really interesting possibilities in Mormon studies. And Gene, about that same time, was working on a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities in order to have us a year-long seminar to discuss issues related to Mormon studies. And amazingly, he got the grant on his first try. Those of you who have applied for an NEH grant know that many times it takes two or three or four different tries. Gene received the grant, and we organized this year-long seminar. The seminar had two objectives. The first one was to invite Mormon scholars in to discuss some topic or other related to their research. So we invited various people in, including Armin Moss, Jan Shipps, Michael Austin, David Whitaker, Janet Bennion, Terrell Givens, and Tom Alexander, to dialogue with various people and various faculty at UVSC, which were part of the seminar group. The second objective was to discuss the prospect of doing Mormon studies at a state college or university. Okay, and so while we had the opportunity to have these people in, this prospect kind of loomed in the background. That's what NEH was interested in getting an answer from us on, right? What is involved in doing Mormon studies at a state college? And some very interesting issues arose out of that discussion. And there was disagreement about how Mormon studies should be approached at UVSC. Gene wanted to call what he was doing at UVSC Mormon cultural studies. And he listed the three following objectives to his work. The first was to combat anti-Mormonism. The second was to enrich the scholarly understanding of Mormonism. And the third was to help Mormons understand, appreciate, and critically assess their own culture. And those of you who are familiar with cultural studies know that there's a kind of methodological normativity to it, right? It brings certain norms and goals to the study of Mormonism that can be critical in nature. Then there was another group of people who were arguing for a more methodologically broad approach to Mormon studies and were interested in taking the word cultural out of the title. And I was part of that group. So Gene and I were actually in dialogue and had a disagreement about how Mormon studies should be approached. I thought that it was both politically wise to be more broad, but also that his approach eliminated possibilities for certain ways of doing Mormon studies by having this cultural studies, by having cultural studies be the dominant methodology. And that was a very, very rich conversation because the seminar was split on this. And a lot of good discussion ensued surrounding whether or not you could do serious academic work in that particular context. If so, how would it be done, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as some of you know, that was about the time that Gene became ill. During the winter and spring, he became increasingly ill and, as you know, passed away in the summer of 2001, and he essentially was unable to finish the seminar by himself. So I ended up hosting the sessions in the spring and doing my best to continue on what Gene was attempting to do. And after Gene's passing in 2001, the administration came to me and said, "What do you want to do about Mormon studies?" Because it had all kinds of anxiety was present on campus and in the community about where Mormon studies was going to go. And I said, "Well, I very strongly said that I thought we ought to continue until somebody else told us we couldn't continue." And so the administration was very supportive and agreed to continue on and named Dennis Potter as the program coordinator in Mormon Studies to carry on Gene's work there. An interesting... The first controversy was this. When Gene received the NEH grant, right around this time, he and I and Elaine Engelhart from UVSC were invited to participate in Sunstone and to just answer questions about what we were doing at UVSC. And in the Q&A session after, someone asked Gene whether or not racism would be an appropriate topic for Mormon studies to address as part of this program. Gene gave a very, very tactful, very thoughtful, very introspective answer, but in the end, predictably, his answer was, of course, issues of race are part of what Mormon studies ought to be doing, but of course it should be done in appropriate, inclusive, productive kinds of ways. It just so happened that a reporter from the Salt Lake Tribune was present in that session of Sunstone, and within 2 days there was a front page story, something to the effect, UVSC wants to study Mormon racism. At the next Board of Trustees meeting, the board of trustees hit the ceiling. They called our president into an executive session of the board of trustees and strongly encouraged Gene to send the grant back to the National Endowment for the Humanities. We gently reminded the Board of Trustees that if they were interested in bad publicity surrounding Mormon studies at UVSC, send an NEH grant back. You can see the headlines in the Chronicle of Higher Education, right? Doctrinaire, Board of Trustees sends NEH grant back. Our president negotiated on our behalf very well. We were able to carry on with the seminar, but as you can see, we were and are continued to be under careful scrutiny from the powers that be in the county. The second story involves an event that we hosted last year. We went along for 2 or 3 years, more or less laying low after the NEH seminar, in the effort to try to create a broad range of support from different groups. We were successful, but we finally decided that it was time to host a Mormon Studies event that dealt with challenging issues. So Dennis Potter and I agreed, the administration agreed, that we were going to host a conference on Mormonism and social justice, dealing with the issues of race, gender, sexuality, environmental ethics, political activism, animal rights, you name it. Little did we know that the background, what was going on in the background was this. We had organized the conference to take place in the last 2 days of the legislative session of the Utah legislature. It just so happened that one of our very doctrinaire, very conservative state legislators had earmarked $3.5 million for UVSC to get in equity funds because UVSC had been so underfunded for many, many years. And the president found out a couple of weeks prior to the conference what we were doing, UVSC president. And I should put the story this way. I was at a conference in South Carolina, and I received a phone call from Dennis Potter, calling me from the Vice President for Academic Affairs Office. Included in this conference call we had was the Dean, the Associate Dean, the Academic Vice President, and Dennis, asking if we could postpone the conference. Because apparently the president was very nervous about a headline in the local newspaper, UVSC wants to explore gays and lesbians in the church. We told him that we couldn't postpone the conference, that we had invited scholars from all over. We reminded him that academic freedom issues were at stake here. But he asked us if there was any way we could... I'm trying to remember the exact terminology he used. Modify some of the titles of the sessions. He used more eloquent language than that. We responded back by saying we will only change the titles of sessions dealing with homosexuality, for example, with the permission of the presenter. Otherwise, they will have to cancel or postpone the event because on principle grounds, we can't do that. So we went back to some of the presenters who agreed to modify the titles of their presentations, and we went ahead with the conference. That was last year. Margaret Toscano was part of that. She was part of that event. And it's interesting how things work in the media and the challenges we face in the media, because out of the presenters in that conference, over half of them had BYU affiliation of some sort. However, both newspapers ran stories dealing with some of the more challenging sessions, including Margaret's. And so the impression is created in the minds of the public, right, that UVSC has, or our program has, some kind of agenda and isn't approaching Mormon studies in a balanced and fair and open way. And that's an ongoing challenge for us as we try to host events, bring scholars in to do credible work. So I'll leave it there. I think I'm beyond my time. So,
In preparing for this panel, I made all kinds of notes about various issues that professors might face in teaching courses on Mormonism and issues of Mormonism in the academy, but I think those issues will come out in our discussion. I think the best way that I can contribute to this panel during my comments is to just share my experiences as a non-LDS student in Mormon studies so far, how I came to Mormon studies and what my experiences have been. Even though I did my undergraduate degree in religious studies, I didn't encounter Mormonism in the classroom until graduate school, until I did my master's degree at Claremont School of Theology, and I took about an equal number of classes at Claremont Graduate University while I was there. Some of you may know that Claremont Graduate University is in the process of trying to establish a Mormon Studies chair and develop a Mormon Studies program. So they are, in a sense, ahead of the game, and there are classes available in Mormonism to students who wish to take them at Claremont Graduate and Claremont School of Theology. So I can't say for sure whether I would have become interested in Mormon studies if I had gone to another institution where that wasn't as available for me. So obviously, as Mormon studies as a field is attempting to grow and attract new scholars, that's the primary issue, is having venues for students that might be interested to encounter Mormonism. I was very fortunate to be able to take a class with Armin Maus at Claremont Graduate. And the great thing about the class was it was at the graduate level, obviously, and it was so that those of us who were non-Mormon in the class could feel free to ask any questions that we had and to bring up any issues or questions that we wanted to address. And equally, the Mormon students in the classroom could feel comfortable to speak freely and to share anything that they might want to, or to equally to bring up issues or questions that they had and wanted to discuss. So that was a really great experience, and I feel like because of that class, I was able to gain access to a lot of information and to learn a lot that I might not have otherwise. In one of my classes at Claremont, I wrote a paper on gender issues in Mormonism, and I enjoyed the research so much and became so interested that I considered the possibility of continuing that research for my thesis, my master's thesis. And originally, I had some reservations about whether or not I wanted to do that, and this is partially because I have especially acute insider-outsider issues, and especially because Mormonism is such a new field and there are few non-Mormon scholars engaging in Mormon studies right now, I think new students might feel some apprehensions about whether to get involved in the field. But my experience has been that I have received lots of encouragement the entire way through, from non-Mormon professors, from Mormon professors, from Mormon students and friends that I had. All of them encouraged me to get involved in the field and to continue my research on Mormon studies. So that's one thing that I would share is that I think that kind of encouragement is really important in trying to attract new scholars to the field. I did my thesis on gays and lesbians in the Mormon Church, and so various issues that I had when researching and writing my thesis. Well, I can't say in regards to other topics, but in regards to my topic, there's not so much published material on that topic as of now, so I had to go to a variety of resources. A lot of my research that I encountered was through the internet, papers that had been published on the internet, articles, and various sources through Mormon websites and non-Mormon websites. And one thing I found when I was doing my research was that the majority of the available research was written by Mormons for Mormons. So when I approached writing this thesis, my goal was not only to bring new insights to the topic and to create a document that would be of interest to Mormons and to those that had already been researching this topic, but also to create something that would be accessible to non-Mormon scholars as well, and those that were not as well-versed in the subject. And that was in relation to things like terminology, because I had already been doing Mormon studies for several semesters. Everything was understandable to me, but I realized that someone coming from outside of Mormon studies might not understand as easily everything that I was reading. So I was attempting to create something that would be easily accessible to anyone who was interested. And I also noticed that because much of the available literature was written by Mormons for Mormons, there were certain aspects of the topic that I felt were not ignored, but were assumed, I guess you could say, because there was, I thought, an assumed shared knowledge between the author and the readers. So that was another thing that I tried to do, was to create something that would bring those issues out and to make it accessible for everyone. I guess that's about it. Just to maybe introduce a little bit of what our next panelist might be discussing. Now I'm in the process of making the transition between being a student and starting to become a professor. Doe and I both were in a class this past semester called Teaching World Religions, in which we addressed a lot of practical issues in teaching a course on world religions. And our semester assignment was to design a syllabus and to do an entire semester's outline for our course on world religions. So I found myself thinking a lot about where Mormonism belonged in that class, because I went in with the assumption that I wanted to bring Mormonism into a course on world religions. But the thing I learned most from doing that assignment is how difficult it is to address everything that you want to address in a course on world religions, but not do it so shallowly that the students won't gain anything. And so I had difficulty thinking about where I would bring in Mormonism and what I could address, what would be the most important things to address in such a short period of time. So, but I think Mark will talk a little bit more about that.
First of all, I'd like to thank Doe and Dan for asking me to be a part of this conversation, and also for, over the years, sharing a great deal of their knowledge and understanding of the LDS tradition with me. They have, in one sense, been as much teachers as students. When I first came to Arizona 20 years ago, I knew less than nothing about the LDS tradition. I knew it existed. I thought that almost all of them were in Utah somewhere. And I got a very interesting surprise after I moved to Mesa. And the first time I went to the grocery store, I was absolutely astounded at the amount of decaffeinated coffee, tea, and soda that were on the shelves. It was almost like I had to really look to find regular coffee. This was sort of the beginning of my introduction to learning about the LDS tradition, and particularly in Arizona. And I finally asked the clerk, and she said, well, don't you know that most of the people who shop here are Mormons? And I sort of scratched my head, and she said, well, they don't drink regular coffee. That was the beginning. I didn't know how important the church was in the local community. One of the other things that I had to confront when I first started teaching here was teaching the introductory course on world religions. Now, this is more difficult than one might suspect. It presents a great many challenges. Among those are deciding what traditions you're going to include in the course and what traditions you're going to leave out, because it is not possible over the course of one semester to even scratch the surface of the diversity of the world's religious traditions. It's sort of like today is what must be Orthodox Judaism, and it's a life of Christ on Thursday. So necessarily, an expert in any of these traditions is going to regard your treatment of his or her specialty as being exceedingly superficial. Now, the interesting part of this is that makes it most difficult in the course of the semester to teach those traditions about which you know the most. In my case, those are Islam and Buddhism. And I really just sweat blood because it's like, oh no, I can't, I don't have time to talk about this. As I became more and more aware of the number of LDS students we have on campus, and that was kind of a gradual process, because at least 20 years ago, an awful lot of LDS students tended not to self-identify. It was rather rare. I think it's become increasingly common for LDS students to self-identify. And over the years in this course, when I first came here, I did not include LDS in the world religions course because I didn't realize how important it was in this community and because I didn't know anything about it. Well, over the course of two decades, more and more students had started to say, well, why don't you talk about us? And this isn't just LDS students. This is always a problem. The Baha'i students, of whom there are very few, will say, why don't you talk about us? The ultra-Orthodox Jewish students will say, why don't you talk about us? That's one problem in teaching the course. The other problem in teaching the course is that no matter what you say, you are going to offend someone. It is absolutely impossible not to. And I don't care. I've offended Muslims, I've offended Jews, I've offended Roman Catholics. You name it, if I've talked about it, I've offended somebody. Because there's a certain body of people who seem to be unwilling or unable of adopting a critical or historical approach to the study of their own religion. Maybe somebody else's, but not their own. Well, eventually I decided I just had to include a section on the LDS tradition in the course. It's very brief. It's about one lecture. But then again, I only have one lecture on Martin Luther. That's just the way the course works. And about 10 years ago, I started editing and rewriting one of the most widely used textbooks for courses in world religions. By the way, with two kids to put through college, it was the smartest move that I ever made. And in the process of rewriting that, I decided there had to be a section, and it's really not very long, about the LDS tradition in the book. It is the only world religions book which has a section about LDS, which tells you something about the state of Mormon studies in the academy. And it's not so much a matter of prejudice, it's a matter that it had never occurred to anyone to do it. And I expected initially that I was going to have a lot of problems with my publisher, which, by the way, I'll put in a plug for them, is Prentice Hall. And I explained why it was important. I explained how many LDS students there were in major universities in the Intermountain West and increasingly throughout the country. And my editor at Prentice Hall said, great idea. Now, that wasn't particularly a magnanimous decision. Editors at commercial presses have one major goal in mind: to sell more books. And, you know, when I explained that there were this many students and that this could, in fact, help to promote the book in a very significant section of the market, they said, great idea. So in that case, you know, their commercial interest and my interest in inclusiveness really came together very, very well. And needless to say, I struggle with this textbook because, believe me, when you put it in writing, then you really offend people. And again, no matter what religious tradition you're talking about, you're going to offend someone. So I struggle with this every time that I have to do a new edition of the book. And one of the reasons why it's such a privilege to be here today is that this gives me some really important insights on how I should go about, you know, completing this process. Thank you very much.
I would like to just make a couple of observations, and then I'm reluctant to ask the questions I want to ask of this panel, so I'm going to ask some of you to ask some questions of the panelists. But what I want you to see about what we've put together here, this has been a real smorgasbord of issues, really, in Mormonism in the academy, and I think that there are really kind of a wide-ranging and variety of issues that have to do. Some of them deal with programmatic issues. Some of them have to deal with, you know, like at Utah Valley State College, how are we going to grow Mormon studies programmatically at various universities, try to see to this. Then there are issues of courses at the course level. How do you teach these courses? Which courses ought to be offered? What does it mean to be Mormon studies? I study Mormonism through the lens of literature, life writing, autobiography, and such. Eduardo's mentioned studying it through the lens of history. There are all sorts of ways, and then this controversy at Utah Valley State College that Brian discussed about what you would call it. Is it Mormon cultural studies because we're using these particular methods and theories to look at the religion by, or is it something what you saw as broad or Mormon studies? And even that name Mormon, we haven't even gotten to that issue of, do we name this Latter-day Saint studies or no? We've kind of decided us academics, this is going to be Mormon studies already. I think that that's in some ways moot. But for our LDS students, which gets to another issue, you know, they're going to be very unsettled, some of them the most orthodox, by even continuing to use the terminology Mormon. And so the other issue that I hear at play often in this and what I face as a teacher in the classroom is dealing with that insider, outsider, Mormon, non-Mormon. How do you position yourself as a teacher of Mormon studies also? Do you out yourself at the beginning? Doe and I have had many discussions about that. I didn't necessarily handle that all that well on this panel, even thinking through that initially. Who am I going to out or not? Do they want to be outed or not? When do you say? And then, if you out yourself as a Mormon, what kind of a Mormon are you? Which gets at Doe's concern in her classroom about how does she position herself within the Mormon community, and how does she help her Mormon students see that Mormonism and Mormon teachers are not monolithic and they have various issues and concerns? How did I do that as someone who used to be a practicing Mormon, who taught at Ricks College for 5 years in the Department of English as a practicing, quite orthodox, gospel doctrine teaching Mormon, no longer so. And as in many ways, I kind of wrote myself out of the church in faithful transgressions in the American West, which is a very painful, conflicted position. Now, when do I reveal that to my students, both Mormon and non-Mormon? And how do I then establish my authority? That's the issue as it is. How do I establish my authority? The thing that Anne talked about that I think was so interesting is that she said in Armin Moss's class, Armin Moss being a very important historian and cultural studies, done a lot of in race, how did he establish the kind of atmosphere that made it comfortable for both Mormons and non-Mormons? Because I know that Doe has struggled with that. What are the methods then pedagogically in the classroom that you use to teach Mormon studies? And I'm certain that Brian has faced this and that Eduardo has, based on, which is another issue, political context. And Brian is telling you about Utah Valley State College. Here it is in Utah. I'm very interested in how we teach Mormon studies in the West, in the Southwest. Arizona, Doe's mentioning, she's trying to give you a broad overview about who is the population here in Arizona. What do they look like? What can we or can we not do because we're in Arizona? Now, I think that there are freedoms that Eduardo perhaps got by being back east, where maybe people don't know a lot about Mormonism anyway, and he doesn't have a lot of Mormons in the classroom. Mormons have been trained to be apologists, essentially, defenders of the faith. It's a characteristic of Mormons. I think from the time, if you're a born Mormon, even if you're a converted one, you've been trained to defend the faith or explain the faith. What does that do to the dynamics of the classroom? And I'm interested in Anne reflecting on what Armand Moss did in his classroom to make it a comfortable atmosphere. And then Mark's discussion about where do Mormons fall in the text? And as someone who's worked at the Center for Learning and Teaching Excellence and worked with teachers who are designing courses, any kind of course, you always have to include and exclude certain things. Well, what is so exciting, what we want to promote about Sunstone coming here to Arizona State University is to say, yes, it's important, legitimate, that we include Mormonism somehow, even if they're this little ellipsed part. They're that significant. There are significant donors that are making significant decisions and influencing policy at this university and others. I, as an academic who's been under surveillance and who knows what that means, you know, at outside in the church education system, knows how important academic freedom issues are, and they come into play in our own classrooms, in the way that we design programs, in the titles. Last night I had a discussion with Brian about why he titled the class Mormon Theology. I said, I don't think in religious studies here at Arizona State University we would title a course Mormon Theology. And I had a whole discussion with him. Obviously, one of the stories he related was that Eugene England, the controversy about how to call things, how to name, because identity, naming conventions are important. So with that kind of overview, I'm really interested in what you all out there have to say. And I think Eduardo is going to have to leave a little bit early because of a funeral, so if he gets up and leaves, you'll know that he wants to be here. But so if you have a question in particular for him, you might ask him initially. But we have until about 11:15. I'm really interested in what you all have to ask the panelists, and if the panelists also have questions for each other, that may go on. But is there someone? And please speak into the mic, because we're recording this and need the record of it.
Good morning. Daniel Ramirez on faculty here in religious studies. I want to take advantage of Eduardo still being in the room, but also to pose it to the other panelists. And I apologize, along with Mark, that my course, too, on Latino religions and cultures has this third column of other Christians. And I apologize to the students all the time that I don't know enough about it, but these are important groups, Jehovah's Witnesses, Latter-day Saints, Seventh-day Adventists, that we need to spend more time on. So there's the confession. I get the sense that Mormon studies is still, it's so embryonic and so defensive and finding its place in the critical academy that we may skew its contributions to the broader questions of religious studies, say, in the hemisphere. So my question is more getting beyond the defensive posture, what would the study of Mormonism hemispherically add to a course on religion in the Americas? Do we put it in under a post-colonial rubric, Anglo-American expansion in the hemisphere? Do we look at migration seriously? What about the missionary experience and the return, et cetera, et cetera? Well, but I'm looking for positive things to add.
I get to answer this. Okay, thank you. You know, that's a very good question about the impact of the growth of Mormonism in the Western Hemisphere. And all I can say is the short answer is I don't know how you would approach this in teaching it. There is an angle to Mormonism that I don't think we've explored, certainly not in this panel, but I think it's part of Mormon studies, is how this message translates to other cultures and other geographies. That needs to be studied much more than it has been studied so far. So in part, I think it is important to look at Mormonism as an outgrowth of the Puritan experience, you know, the Second Great Awakening. But the message has changed over time, has transformed itself, not only as you move into the 20th century, but as the movement expands, that I think we really need to take a look at why conversions are happening to begin with. That's such a huge issue. I'm not sure how I'd address that in teaching that, but simply to acknowledge that the phenomenon exists. It is an important phenomenon in Latin American societies, as you know. But beyond that, you know, the field is wide open. That's the best I can do with that.
Can respond to that. I think that's something that could be addressed within the larger topic of looking at the recent developments in global Christianity. The fact that the center of gravity of Christianity is shifting from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere, and not only that Christianity is moving, but what kinds of Christianity are shrinking and what kinds are growing, and looking at why that is, why certain kinds of Christianity are becoming so popular in the world, and why they're becoming popular in certain parts of the world. What is it about Mormonism that's attractive to people in the southwest part of the world?
I'd like to take a stab at that from a theoretical perspective. To a certain extent, within the academy, there has been the assumption that Christianity consists of a very limited and fixed body of traditions: Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, European Protestantism. Now, if we look at the history of Christianity, there are a lot of Christianities that are no longer with us, all sorts of Christianities. And if we look at Christianity, say, in sub-Saharan Africa, that's probably the best example, we see that there's an amazing flowering of new kinds of Christianities. And LDS, I think, is an example of one of those new Christianities that's been remarkably successful. And if we look at this as an open tradition, one that, you know, that continues to develop and grow, rather than as a fixed set of boxes, you know, pretty much closed with the Protestant Reformation, you know, we're really missing something important about the dynamics of the tradition.
Well, I was just thinking that how one way that I have chosen to solve that problem for myself is to approach Mormonism through the rubric or through the lens of new religious movements or alternative religions, because then, well, when I first wrote my proposal for for admission to the PhD program, I wrote about wanting to look at particularly women's movement from hierarchical to non-hierarchical religions. So, for instance,
Mormon women's movement from Mormonism to New Age or neo-paganism, those kinds of movements, and maybe Roman Catholic, Latina Catholic women moving to evangelical Christian or charismatic kinds of movements. And but the new religious movement framework, I've found, really allows me to, and I didn't find this out really until I taught the New Religious Movements course this last semester. It was such a rich way of framework for looking at conversion, because that's what we're really talking about. So most of these movements are new, or in terms of Mormonism, a lot of the religious, the major theological and structural changes came when there became more converts than there were indigenous, you know, kind of homegrown Mormons. And so the idea of conversion is where a lot of the controversy with the anti-cult and counter-cult movements takes place. And so, looking at kind of themes in new religious movements has helped me look at those locations and think about those. So I don't know if that is helpful or interesting to you, but
I had a different kind of question. It concerns, I guess, the expansion or the possibilities of growth in the area of Mormon studies. I was very astounded at the controversy and the obstacles that you've dealt with at Utah Valley State University in launching your program. I know that Eugene England had such great ideas and plans for how far he wanted to take that, and it sounds like you have to deal with the political issues and all of that, and it seems on one level I think we can be optimistic, but it seems to me there's a lot of obstacles. I think what's happening at Claremont, there's several of your products of that. Of the Claremont experience, it's really great to see that Claremont is moving, and apparently there's strong support from within amongst a number of very wealthy, I guess, influential Latter-day Saints down there, living down there, that are helping to launch that program. And I've even heard talk that they want to try to at ASU. Is there talk about having a Mormon Studies chair or a Mormon Studies? I've heard references to that. I don't know how much truth is in that, but all of those are encouraging signs. And Utah State has been trying to get a Leonard Aaron, kind of get a Mormon Studies program launched there. But it seems like and it seems like in Utah that should be the place where there should be some significant Mormon Studies programs. As much as it's great to see what Claremont's doing, I mean, Claremont's got the academic infrastructure, but they're so far away from a lot of the sources that are actually in Utah, and it'd be great if they could maybe transplant Claremont, what's going on at Claremont to Utah, because it seems like from what Brian has said, there's a lot of, you're having to deal with these nasty politicians, because you're a state university. In getting that funding, and I just wondering, I wonder what you see as the future of the growth of Mormon Studies programs.
Thanks for that question, Newell, and I'm going to let Brian answer it. I wanted to mention, too, that I know that at Utah State University, which is in Logan, there are people working on Mormon Studies as well.
Yeah,
so
been very involved.
Right. So I'm going to let Brian speak to that, and then I might say a couple of things.
Let me just say that Utah State's bachelor's program in religious studies is going through the final phases of approval by the Board of Regents. And that's an exciting development. Regarding the future, although it is by some miracle that we still exist, right, and function, I'm optimistic still, because despite our surroundings, we've had a very supportive administration from the beginning. And even with the new president, William Cederberg, he is supportive of religious studies, but he constantly reminds us of the context within which we operate. and we remind him of the academic context within which we need to operate. And so that's the negotiation that's going on now. But given the present circumstances, I'm optimistic that things will continue to grow and develop. But you never know where a meteorite is going to come from, like the newspaper article. We had no idea when we were sitting in that Sunstone session that there would be a front page article that had a particular way of framing the issues that would create so much controversy. So we never know where the next, you know. And a lot of it has to deal with the media and the way in which the media presents what we're doing. You know, we teach the Mormon Cultural Studies class. That gets occasional complaints from students and parents. We never know whose parent or is it, you know, who's in the classroom and who knows who and who's going to create this or that kind of issue. So I wanted to say a couple of things about Claremont because I graduated from Claremont and I've kind of been in informal conversation with the administration there about what's going on. And the politics have not escaped Claremont either, because what Claremont has done is they have created these councils, and part of the job of these councils in Islamic studies or in Buddhist studies or others is to reach out to the community and to have community involvement in what they're developing. So just in terms of nomenclature, the council is called the Council for the Study of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Okay, now, the Claremont people are very insistent on calling what they're doing Mormon studies. And I know there was some discussion. I don't know all the details, but I know there was some discussion about that. And it was decided that Mormon studies was going to be the name because of the greater inclusion. But so, as this gentleman, this professor stated, it's in its infancy, and there are all kinds of interesting issues that surround its growth and development that a lot of it remains to be seen. To be quite honest, I don't know where it's going to be at in 5 or 10 years, especially in the state of Utah.
What's the status of the thing down here in Arizona?
I don't know. I don't know about any real initiatives in Mormon studies in Arizona. I don't. Do you, Linnell? I want to address this issue of community involvement, political meddling, attempted censorship by politicians, from the perspective, and I want to give you some advice from somebody who's been involved in Islamic studies for a very long time. I don't think Utah is the right place to have for Mormon studies for the same reason that I don't think Saudi Arabia is the place to have a major center for Islamic studies. And I'm not trying to be disparaging, I'm just trying to be realistic here. There have been many instances in the United States where universities, including this one, have either turned down or declined to pursue really, really, really large donations from people in the Middle East. And the reason is that they typically come with so many theological strings attached. They'll say, we'll give you an endowed chair, but we want you to hire an X, a Y, or a Z. Right? They want to have confessional control of the appointments. That's why I think that Claremont's idea here is a bad idea. Once you start going down that path, you've really compromised your academic independence, your intellectual independence, particularly if there's money attached to it. It's tempting. It's really tempting when you're trying to build a program and there's somebody out there with a big pocket full of money and they want to give it to you. But I think we're better off in developing Mormon studies, which I really think is an important thing to do, to develop it as an academic enterprise that is not subject to theological control. Let BYU do that if you want to do it from a theological perspective or an insider's perspective. What better place than BYU? But let's not do it here. And let's not do it at Claremont either.
Well, I suspect that in and of itself will be controversial, too. I think one of the points is that we can't be politically naive, either programmatically as the institution or as teachers in our classroom. So it's helpful for us, and what's helpful for me about this and why I want to keep connecting with people who are doing Mormon studies and who are doing this embryonic work is to say, why are you doing that? What can we anticipate? What are the political implications for me in my classroom and for us beyond? Now, at ASU Polytechnic, I'm actually in the Humanities Art and Arts program, which includes religious studies. And since I'm just there newly and we're newly growing these programs, I have suggested that I would like to develop a Mormon literature course. And immediately, even as I was talking about that, I think that the people who are my bosses were saying, all right, let's think about how and why you would do that, and let's talk about it. And initially, I got upset about that because I'd had people, they balked at it. I was thinking they were balking at it. They weren't really balking at it. They were saying, we need to be politically astute, and we need to decide how we will talk about this course to the public, to non-Mormons, Mormons, whatever. So I think that me also talking with somebody like Brian Birch or people who have been at Claremont thinking through this, I think it's really important for us to be well-informed and to think through the potential problems. We can't anticipate everything, but we shouldn't be naive about it either. And I tend to be kind of like, oh, happy day, yeah, let's do Mormon Lit. And I'm going to do this work, and we got to do Angels in America, and da, 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 and this is it. And you just put that on, and you don't think through it, right?
I wanted to respond to Professor Woodward. I take everything you say as really, really important. But I don't think that you can talk about these issues in the abstract. It depends upon the specific kinds of negotiations that are taking place in the institutions. You know, for example, you know, we've had occasions to have to turn down certain kinds of opportunities because of that. So the question is, is academic freedom being maintained? Is the intellectual integrity of the program going to be jeopardized? Or is there a strong possibility that it could be jeopardized as a result of some kind of support from one entity or the other? And that's what's been going on at Claremont, because Claremont has been absolutely immovable on certain issues regarding academic freedom. And it's from that standpoint then that the negotiations, as a lot of Latter-day Saints are still getting used to what academic freedom means, right? Especially in Utah County, but at Claremont too, right? And the importance of it in the background. So it's a constant. It's an opportunity to instruct people about why academic freedom is important, even in Utah County, even when your legislators are saying it's only because of this. Those Utah State Legislature that you as a state college exist, you know, those kinds of very ominous statements in the media. Oh, yeah.
Why the historical origins of that?
Well, I know that that Claremont, the dean of Claremont Graduate University, Karen Torgerson, wanted to create a model for working with these different faith communities. And it was about that time, I don't know the details, but it was about that time that Claremont was approached, or there was discussion between individuals in the community who wanted to develop something in Mormon studies at Claremont. And so it was brought in underneath this idea of these various councils. So there are multiple councils in, as I said, Islamic studies, Buddhist studies, Latter-day Saint studies, and I think there are a number of others.
I just wanted to, I can't remember who mentioned it, I think maybe it was Eduardo, but I wanted to just note that there is a panel this afternoon on the international church. So how have international locations changed Mormonism there, the expression of Mormonism there, and vice versa, kind of. So if anybody's interested, since he brought that up as...
Just a final comment. I do think it's key individuals who make these kinds of things happen. I remember Eugene England being at BYU and legitimizing Mormon literature for me, and he has been really
someone who had led the way in this regard, and I hope that this will continue some of the work that he and others have done, who have done work like Newell Bringhurst, who said that Mormon studies, Mormon history, Mormon literature matters, and that we should study it. So I thank you all for being involved in this and for coming, and let's thank the panelists for their contribution.